Okay, well, Keelan certainly opened a conversation on chemtrails, or so-called chemtrails. Lots of texts coming in on that. And I was thinking just during the news there that obviously Metairie would have to be in on it as well if it was about controlling the weather, because they predict the weather, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 days in advance with reasonable accuracy, in fairness to them now. It's improved much greatly. And also the amateur weather forecasters, the likes of Carlo Weather and the Donegal Weather Channel, they'd also have to be in cahoots, because they predict the weather. And Keelan was of the view that that the aeroplanes are controlling the weather as part of the whole, as part of the climate change thing. So there's an awful lot of moving parts here. It's not. It's certainly not a an issue, a theory I'd subscribe to, if the truth be told. It's very strange with the chemtrails. I noticed the same thing above my house for the past month or so. They look like really fake, thick clouds. Even my kids noticed. One day, we had torrential rain. I've never seen so many before. The caller on the radio really brought it home. These chemicals contain aluminium fluoride, etc., which settles on the ground and enter our food chain. Such chemicals calcify our pineal gland and dumb us all down. Time to waken up, folks. But obviously, it's not working as much on this person, because they're telling the rest of us that we need to wake up. I 100% agree with that gentleman about the trails in the sky. I see it all the time. Now, aeroplanes will always leave a trail behind them. It's just what it is. Greg, 300 planes pass over the county of Donegal, thinking the same thing this morning when I look up at the sky with 3 cloud trails above. Hi, I've noticed the exact same thing with trails in the sky where I live. It eventually turned into a very fake-looking, really white cloud. One day, there was a really heavy downpour of rain, so heavy that I had to stay in the car outside my house. There is definitely trails that were never there before. The man talking about planes in the sky should get his information in a better place than conspiracy theory websites. I think it's actually really quite insightful to sort of have this conversation, because, you know, you get to know what people are thinking. Prince said years and years ago that he would notice in the summertime when the skies were sprayed with chemicals, people's mood would worsen. Also, apparently these trails are full of heavy metals that can affect our bodies in many negative ways. Just in relation to that, you know, if you're worried about aluminium, stop using antiperspirant, because it's full of aluminium. And I'll tell you, if you use that antiperspirant that offers, you know, 72 hours, 3 days of protection, you can imagine what kind of chemicals are in that if you're actually really worried about aluminium. Greg, this guy Keelan is correct. I told you yonks ago, Mary. Well, Mary, don't all of a sudden agree with you just because Keelan agrees with you, but I really do appreciate your contact. This spraying has been confirmed in numerous court cases and Congress committee meetings in the USA. They are spraying all sorts of chemicals. Most interestingly, Tennessee banned it, and now they have blue skies. Well, I followed the case in Tennessee, and some of the elected reps over there, what they were stating, and didn't actually provide a great deal of proof, but I'm not going to argue with about it. But as I say, you know, all the forecasters, if it is about controlling weather, all the forecasters and Metairie and, say, Donegal Weather Channel, Alan, Dan and Carlo Weather, they'd all have to be sort of in cahoots with it as well, because they're predicting what's happening 2 or 3 days ahead. No dog should be licensed until you can show that the dog is microchipped. I'm not sure how that's going to stop someone being bitten, but maybe that's just a more broader issue. Once again, dangerous dog owners can't get it into their heads. A dangerous dog is what it is. Why do these people need dangerous dogs? The texter asks, and on it goes. Thank you so much for all of your communications. Keep them coming in to us. We read them all. 0860 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 0749 125000. Walking on the Five Finger Beach in Malin is a nightmare with the amount of dogs running around off their leads. And all their owners say it won't harm you. Yeah, indeed. He's a gentle giant. It's a disgrace how these dog laws aren't enforced. Grandchild with autism terrified of dogs because unleashed dog jumped on him, and it's a nightmare taking him to the beach with people having dogs on their leads. Dog owners, please, please take notice, they ask. You're very welcome back to the programme, and we have in studio with us Kieran Kelly. Good morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
And congratulations on your book, One for the Road.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
What an undertaking. Yeah. 200 years of pubs and hotels, the pubs and hotels of Letterkenny. Why this subject matter?
It started in kind of lockdown period. It was kind of, you know, we all had things, we had time in our hands and we had kind of things to do, and I was doing different things. And one of the things I did was I just did a bit of research on the pubs for my father. Mm-hmm. I thought he'd find it interesting, and I just put it together in that. And it was a very short little 50-page thing, and he was grand. And then basically, I put it aside. And then last year, then I went back to it and decided to expand on it. And it's become a 376-page book now. And the fact that it's 2024 now makes it 200 years. The earliest records I could find was 1824. Mm-hmm. Of course, there would have been pubs and places before that and hotels before that, but there's no record of them. So the very first record I could find is Piggott's Directory of 1824. And that makes it a nice round number, 200 years up to 2024. So,
Is this self-published?
Yes.
I mean, it's a remarkable achievement. It's of such high quality.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I have a lot of thanks for it to Stevie Toy of Logopix for doing the design, and Brown Printers locally as well for printing it. I believe in keeping it local, and it's brilliant. I'm very happy with the quality of it.
Obviously, it's text-rich, but it's picture-rich as well. How hard was it to draw all that together?
It was very important to me to have photos because... if it's just facts and figures, it can be a bit hard to read, it's a hard slog. And people judge by flicking through, and they'll see it's filled with, there's almost 1,000 photographs in there.
Really, it's remarkable.
And I basically went cap in hand to people asking them, have you got any photos? Have you got any photos of this pub, of that pub? A lot of families are still around who had owned pubs before, and they were so generous to share them with me, because it does bring it to life. And it captures what the pub is, and this is... what I'm kind of, I actually stress it in the very first couple of paragraphs. This book is not a celebration of alcohol in any way. It's a celebration of the pub, of what it is, what brings people together. And our life revolves around them. Communions, weddings, funerals, our life, we go to the pub. It's where we meet our friends, we meet our partners there, perhaps. I met my wife, Olivia, in McGinley's Bar in Letterkenny. So many people, where your grandparents met and everything. So that's what I wanted to celebrate, and that's what I wanted to capture with the photographs too, to show that people enjoying themselves in these places, being amongst friends, people maybe sadly no longer with us as well. So it's great now to preserve them in this book, and they'll always be there. The many characters of the town. I worked in a few pubs over the years locally myself, and I recognise all the characters that I remember from years ago. And it's great now to have them in this book preserved forever.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a story of the evolution of the pub as well, isn't it? I mean, obviously, you talk of 200 years of pubs and hotels of Letterkenny, but is there something that you sort of noticed in bringing it together over those 200 years?
Yeah, it was very interesting. I mean, there's by and large... there's actually, funny enough, there was 15 pubs and one hotel on the main street in Letterkenny in 1824. And there's pretty much the same now. And that's because of the decentralisation of the town, that the pubs that have spread out to Ballyrain and to further afield. So it's come
full
circle.
But the core number is kind of still there 200 years
on. It is, exactly. The core number's still there. And there's actually some of the licences that existed back then are still in the town. They would have been transferred from pub to pub to pub to pub. And actually, there's a hotel in there. The very first hotel that I could find was Laird's Hotel at the Market Square. And that licence is still in Letterkenny.
Wow.
In a hotel. And I won't say which, because you have to buy the book. But it's I found that interesting. One of the things I found very interesting too was how the publican was seen as the esteem he was held in locally, and she for that matter, because it was seen, for example, in the 19th century, the town commissioners were made up, who the ruling, the council of the town, so to speak. Many of them were publicans. The very first town council in 1898 that was elected to Letterkenny, 6 out of the 9 councillors were publicans.
Wow.
And the chairman was a publican. The very first woman elected to Letterkenny Town Council, Kate McCary, in 1925, was a hotelier. So the esteem that they were held in locally as you know, high society almost in a way, it was found that very, very interesting to see that.
So what do these pubs look like 200 years ago?
Well, a lot of them would have been small little kind of, not shacks is a bad, wrong word to use, but thatch roof and so on, you know. But some of the pubs are still actually, I mean, for example, Blake's Bar, pretty much looks the same from the outside.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's been done up
of
inside.
Course, yeah.
But from the outside, it's still the same. And you can see the photographs in that bar is still the same. Other pubs then, they would have been small. Most little kind of... it's not the pub that we think of today.
That's what I'm kind of getting at, yeah.
Not quite exactly. It would have been kind of... But it was still a social place to go to. It was still... like, you wouldn't have had kegs. You would have barrels, for example, and so on. And it would have been that. And actually, I found it very interesting in meeting people. They still have little artifacts from the old pubs. I have a few of them myself. Jugs and bottles. And it's great to have them still as well. They're great to have.
Yeah. And Were they mostly dominated? Would it be mostly men socialising in pubs a couple of hundred years ago?
Yes, socialising, yes. But surprisingly, a lot of women owned pubs as well.
Yeah.
Perhaps because they might have been widows and inherited the licence, for example. But typically, you would have had a place called the Snug for women. And that's all over Ireland, where a small little room, a little ante room. One of them was, for example, in Willie Dillon's bar just near the Market Square. They kind of basically went in and the ladies had their drinks in there and the men had their drinks over there. But of course, that's all changed. But it's interesting too, just to see, and I go through it, the evolution of the pub locally is reflected, sorry, that nationally is reflected locally. The things that were happening all around the country were happening in Letterkenny as well. And it's interesting. It's very interesting to see the evolution of the pub. And one of the things I mentioned is that the earliest directive of 1824 and again 1846 lists the occupations of the town. People who, you know, were saddlers and harness makers, publican. We don't have saddlers and harness makers anymore, but we still have the publican, and it's endured over the highs and lows. We've gone through over 200 years. The pub is still endured. It's still there. And in 200 years' time again, it'll still be there. Maybe not the same way we look at it now. Maybe not the same way, but it'll still be a publican. And who knows whether mobile phone shops or vape shops will still be around. They will look at those old records and see, wow, you know.
But I mean, there's still traditional pubs. You know, you see that we kind of went through a stage and that those pubs are still there, of course, whereby everything is TVs absolutely everywhere. Yeah. And what have you. And then you see some pub chains that try and be a little bit more traditional. Obviously, the TV has to be there or what have you, but you know what I mean? You can see that we still hark back to a time as well.
Definitely. I mean, there's a market for the sports bar. I mean, that's, again, from a local point of view, we can see that starting around 1988 for the Euros, Ireland's first tournament. And then again, Italia 90, Donegal 92, where if you couldn't go to the games, you couldn't go to America 94 to see the World Cup, you could go to the pub to watch it. And so the evolution of the sports bar really took place then. But there was a survey undertaken a couple of years ago, and Lonely Planet, I think it was, and the vast majority of tourists want the traditional Irish pub. They want the singing music. They want the turf fire. They want that. So a lot of pubs now have gone back to that aspect. So a kind of a marriage between the two of having the screens, but also having the traditional feel. And it's great to go into a pub now and hear the live music being played, traditional music being played. It's not just for tourists, it's for us as well.
Of course.
It's great. It's fantastic.
And talking about evolution how we engage in the pub, I'm not sure if there was any pubs in Letterkenny at the time. Do you remember Sky had this notion of 3D?
Yeah.
And there was definitely at least one pub in Donegal whereby they thought we'd all be standing in pubs with 3D glasses on.
I think we'll try anything, but I don't think we'll go that far.
I can't remember which pub it was, and you could go, and the TV had to be 3D, of course, and they had to have the 3D coverage, and everyone was going to be sitting around watching 3D. That's only about, I think that's less than 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there was a fad for 3D when I came out with the 3D screens.
And by the way, just when we were talking about pubs and you talked about the evolution of pubs, I was thinking that one didn't work.
No, exactly. And there'll always be these, they'll give things a go, but who knows, and is it 100 years' time, maybe there'll be holograms of football matches in the pub for watching the game, who knows? But
can you imagine that? Yeah. Or at least holograms of bands or something, who's to say?
True.
So this book's going to have broad appeal. As you say, it's not about boozing. It's about, you know, the social hub.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? A lot of lads, that was their counselling session as well. And for women as well. Do you know what I mean? You might not necessarily talk directly about your problems, but you talked around them and through them. It depends on the individual, don't get me wrong. It was the only contact you probably had with your peers. Do you know what I mean?
Like, very true. It was a place to talk to your friends, especially the kind of the older generations who didn't talk about their things, but they would kind of subtly mention it to their friends at the bar counter. Deals were done over things, like, you know what I mean? Like, for example, I remember my father, we were getting work done in the house, and we didn't go looking for phoning people up as you would now to try and get the work done. It was done by chatting to a man in the pub, and that's how deals were done.
Still, to some extent, the best deals.
Exactly,
come that way,
you know.
So, over a pint rather than over a table in an office somewhere.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you come right up to contemporary times.
2024. Yeah.
Right. So you've got it's a good little archive for people who are younger now. But people who maybe did the principal socialising 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50, you know what I mean? There's
exactly.
A lot of interest there because it'll trigger a lot of memories. That's what you're expecting, as well as it being a very important archive.
That's what I want to do. And actually, some people who have got advanced copies were saying that they haven't even started reading the book yet. They're just loving looking at the photographs and the memories coming back of oh, that place, or that person, or whatever. And it's great. I love to hear that. It's because that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a preservation of these places. This book now is going to be preserved. It's been sent off to the British Library, the National Library in Ireland, all these places for preservation. You have every book published, you have to do that. So these places will always be remembered now.
And what has always been very important to me is whoever is behind the jamp, whoever's behind the bar.
Yes.
You know, you talked about personalities, but, you know, I've seen individuals drive trade and retain trade to a pub. The person behind the bar is so important.
Definitely, 100%. It was a social outlet for people, especially if you went in years ago in the pub and there was nobody else there. The barman would talk. I mean, there was a famous thing about 20 years ago where Raymond Blake and Blake's Bar said there was no mobile phones when they were first coming out, no mobile phone conversations at the bar counter to talk to the barman. Because it's very, very important. It's quite rude not to do that. And so it's important to the role of the barman was that he was a counsellor. He was everything. He was a friendly face. He was everything. Not every barman had a friendly face. My dad, I met a few over the years who didn't have the friendly faces, but myself included, maybe. But it was an important role in society. And as I said, that's what it was reflected in, for example, being elected to the town council and so on. Yeah.
So as much as you can trace it back, and there might be breaks or slight moves or whatever, the oldest bar in Letterkenny is Blake's.
The oldest bar that I can discover that through the records that, and it's still in the same family.
Yeah.
And it's the earliest record I can find for that is 1839.
It was remarkable, isn't it?
Document that I found just last year, and it's the valuation of Letterkenny in 1839, and it lists all in order of where they were in the main street, the people who lived where, and it mentions publican, whoever was a publican, and John Doherty, publican, was listed there in 1839 on that spot, and it's his great, maybe another great grandson, Kevin Blake, is now running that bar. It's passed all the way down, so it's great that that's still there. I would class as the oldest pub in Letterkenny, still in the same family.
Yeah, it's a remarkable history to be able to trace that back. So the book has been officially launched tonight.
Tonight.
Whereabouts?
The Regional Cultural Centre at 7 p.m. And we're having live music provided by Barney and Hugo. And some people might remember Barney and Hugo were the first winners of the very first singing pub competition in 1969. Wow. The first Letterkenny Folk Festival in 1969.
Do they still play together? Have they come together especially for you?
They've come together especially for this. Wow. And I've asked them, and as they're the guests of honour who will launch the book. And I'm delighted. I'm absolutely thrilled that they will be there. It's 55 years since they won the singing pub competition. They won it on behalf of Sean Harvey's Singing Lounge, which was near the Market Square. So I'm delighted they're going to be there tonight. I want to create almost a pub atmosphere in the RCC, at the Regional Cultural Centre, where there's a few surprises in store. I don't want to say what, but hopefully it'll be a lovely place for people to come and remember, and the photographs will be displayed on the screen and everything, so to chat and remember and socialise.
And it's one of those books, look, we're trying to talk about it, but I think people need to get it into their hands and have a look through it. It's that type of... And it's available... when will it be available if it's not already, and where will it be available?
It's available, if anybody wants to order it online, it's available at letterkennyhistory.com. You can buy it online already there, but it'll be in the shops from tomorrow, because if I have it in today, people won't go to the lunch tonight. So...
Can I just say one thing? I'm reading between the lines here. Kieran wants as many views as possible at this launch tonight. Okay, it's going to be a very special evening. It's going to be setting a certain atmosphere in the RCC. You've got fantastic music and a lovely connection there as well to exactly what we're talking about. So it's going to be a very special experience, and it's open to everyone at the Regional Cultural Centre tonight from 7 p.m.
Yes.
And go along and support Kieran, because this is a fantastic piece of work, and also to there's a real purpose to it in archiving this, because it's not... Stuff gets lost.
Yeah.
Very quickly, skips a generation or something along those lines. But now this 200 years of the history of the pub and hotel in Letterkenny is locked in.
Yes, as far as I'm concerned. Somebody might point out, oh, you forgot this here, you forgot it. As going by the records that I could possibly find, that's it now preserved.
But that is triggering conversation.
It is,
it's
of course.
It's not picking a floor. It's
no, exactly. Saying, And I welcome that. I'm looking forward to people going, you left this out, you left that out. You know what I mean? But it's, or my grandfather told me that didn't happen there, it happened in this other pub. And that's brilliant, because that's, again, what it's about. It's socialising, it's having the conversation, and it's talking about it.
We didn't mention too, and I've just noticed here as I'm flicking through old ads.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I think
very
is cool.
Important too. Very important. There's maps as well. I've kind of traced where they were located.
Hegarty's Hotel, Letterkenny.
Yes.
For comfort, cleanliness, and moderate charges. Dinners, luncheons, and teas. Wedding parties catered for. Fully licensed. All spirits of best brands stocked. Proprietor Michael McNeilis.
Yes.
I presume it's McNeilis. It's M. Neilis.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
But again, the ads are another aspect of bringing
it
to life.
That really
too.
Opens the window to
it
the
does.
Past.
It does. Doesn't it really it? Does. Yeah, yeah. And that's it's like there was a lot of work went into going up to Dublin to go to the National Archives, going to the National Photographic Archives, mm-hmm. going to just all over looking for the information and going to the old newspaper archives as well.
When in Letterkenny, meet your friends at the Rainbow Bar. Spacious lounges, TV and piano.
Brendan,
and I'm not going to read anymore because people are going to have to get the book and go tonight to read.
Brendan Behan had a drink in Letterkenny in the Rainbow Bar when he was here in the 1960s. And so it's great to have that as well. That was located basically opposite the top of Rosemount on mm-hmm. the street.
Anyway, so. Listen, people can get along, have yes. a chat to you tonight.
Thanks so much.
There'll be books available tonight, tell me.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
You might even tonight. Scribble your name in them for people. I think, and we'll move on now in a second, but often it's hard to know what to buy someone, right? And Father's Day has just passed and maybe you missed a trick there. But if you forgot Father's Day, I think there's a lot of dads in and or granddads for that matter, in and around Letterkenny that will be very nice and nostalgic for them, or even get it now and put it away for Christmas or something mm-hmm. along those lines while it's fresh in your head. Primarily, though, get along to the launch of Kieran Kelly's book, One for the Road. It's tonight at 7 p.m. in the Regional Cultural Centre. You're going to try and create sort of an atmosphere there. Mm-hmm. There are surprises on the night. And just remind people of the music again.
Barney McDade and Hugo Daly.
Who are coming together 55 years after.
After winning the very first singing pub competition.
I mean, if that in and itself is, I mean, that's terribly special. All right, brilliant stuff. Kieran, best of luck with it. It's clear how much effort went into it. And I presume you can blame your dad for it, really, because it all sort of started with him in lockdown. I mean,
thanks,
thank your dad for it. Thank you, dad. All right, well done. Back with more shortly. Right, let's go to Mallon and say a big congratulations to Shane Byrne, chair of Mallon Tidy Towns. Hiya, Shane.
How are you, Greg?
I'm doing good. How are you? Congratulations, because Mallon has been declared the best kept village on the island of Ireland. What a wonderful... what a wonderful credit to all involved in keeping it as beautiful as it is.
Thanks a million, Craig. Yeah, we were shortlisted. We got notification there last week that we were shortlisted with Ballinure in County Antrim and Mulroney in County Mayo for the Best Kept Village Award, and we're pleasantly surprised yesterday when we went to Belfast to receive the award that we got first.
Yep, and let's just reiterate, this is an all-Ireland competition. To be shortlisted is a remarkable achievement in and of itself, but to come out on top is something else altogether and should be celebrated across the county. What were the judging criteria? It's not just how nice or pretty it's kept, is it? There's more to it than that as well, Shane.
There is, Greg. There's a lot of things involved in it. You know, The name of the award is the Best Kept Village, but there's a lot of other aspects to it as well, you know, eco-friendliness, biodiversity, you know, we have a new wildflower garden there that I'm sure that added to a points tally at the end, and the Mallon won the Tidy Towns competition twice before 1970 and 1991, but that particular competition is confined to Republic of Ireland, where this competition is a 32 county cross border initiative, and you know, we were delighted because it's to win it in the Republic of Ireland is one thing, but to win the All Ireland version of it is really pleasing, you know.
And this is not like the town was, you know, a few things were done to sort of try and enter this competition. This is, you know, an ongoing work and pride in the area, isn't it?
It is, surely, Greg. This is ongoing for years. Like, the first year Mallon won the Tidy Towns was 1970. This is ongoing from year to year. The amount of people that have been involved in this over the years is just not the present committee and excuse me, as people that have been involved for the last 50 years in the Mallon Development Association, and the pride that, you know, that the local people have in their own properties, as well as there's a lot of people to be thanked in this. You know, the people within the town that look after their own properties. There's the CP workers in Mallon under the guidance of Danny McGonigal, who do tremendous work. And there's people like in the town, QA McCaughan, who over the years been in the committee for a long, long time, but the work that QA does and Mal Development second to none. And we have, you know, we have Ukrainian people that are living in the town, that they have a group and they go out and they clean the roads and paint fences, and you know, it's a combined effort.
Yeah, because there's a very traditional feel to Malin Village, one that you don't see in an awful lot of places. Is that, do you recognise that description of it?
Definitely, Greg. It's a community spirit and pride that people have in their own communities. Mm. You know, and it's very evident in Malin that there's everybody pulls together within that community, and it's lovely to see when we get an award like this, you know.
I'm delighted for you. I really am. And you know what? It's a really good advertisement for the area as well, for people coming in and visiting as well. So I'm delighted for all of you and all involved for the Tidy Towns Committee. But as you say, it takes the whole community to buy into this, doesn't it? And they have, and it looks it's looking wonderful, and that's now been recognised.
And as Greg, it's not really just about the Malin Development Association, but all the community groups within the area that pull together, and the sense of goodwill and community spirit is very evident in Malin.
All right, brilliant stuff. Well done to all. Thanks so much for sharing. Did you go up to Belfast yesterday, was it?
Yeah, we were up yesterday. Myself and Jacqueline were up yesterday, and we collected the award. We had no idea going up that we knew we were shortlisted, but yeah, we had no idea that we were going to win the overall thing, Greg. So it was very pleasing, you know.
Great stuff, Shane. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Take care, and congratulations again to Shane, the Tidy Towns Committee, and the wider community there as well. 086 60 25,000. A caller says, I, as an elderly person, can't walk the streets of Letterkenny with e-scooters. Are there no Gardaí in this town? Well, the e-scooter laws came in. You can't ride a bike on a footpath. You shouldn't be riding your e-scooter on the footpath. I notice since the new law came in, I haven't seen one e-scooter on the road. They're still flying up and down the footpaths. That's on the approaches to Letterkenny town itself. I don't know what's going on. It'd be great to see some sort of an enforcement. People now can legally ride them, which is, you know, that's what people wanted. But get off the footpaths. Cycle lanes are fine, but get off the footpaths where people are walking and use the road, because that is what the law dictates. And people are entitled to feel safe walking around their local streets. There was something there a few months ago when the flooding was in India. They sent up planes to burst the clouds before they come over India. I thought it was a weird thing. So you never know that what we don't know about. But we do know about it. There's an element of climate control, cloud seeding and cloud dissipation and stuff like that there. That's one thing. But this, what we've been talking about, or what others have been talking about, is something very different. A caller believes they've got swollen, a sore throat and swollen glands as a result of chemtrails. There's one park in the Twin Towns, and there's no parking toilets or anywhere to wash your hands. You have to abandon your car, as there's nowhere to park. Well, tell us where it is. We can see if we can get on to that. Hi, Greg. If you compare our skies today to what they were many years ago, there is a massive difference. Laws are being passed in other parts of the world to stop these chemical injections into the air. Various social media accounts are highlighting the excessive spraying in our skies through different parts of Ireland today. The state of our skies, they say, is not normal. Another, if people Google Train Force and Air Finder and see what the American airplanes are doing off the west coast of Ireland, they would be shocked. You can literally Google anything, though, and you'll find something on it. Chemtrails, we need an expert from the Aviation Authority or a meteorologist on the 9 till noon show to discuss what chemtrails are. We're trying to track down a meteorologist to discuss that. But I just think some people get so locked into a point of view nowadays that even if we have someone who claims to be able to disprove it, that people won't change their minds. It's just the way things are now. But it might make for an interesting conversation. Betty Holmes is spokesperson for Donegal Action for Cancer Care. Betty, how are you keeping? Lovely to chat to you again.
The same as that, Greg. Battering on, you know, yourself, for fighting corners and keeping politicians and all these people busy.
Hopefully the outbox and the emails as busy as it ever is, ever was, Betty.
Oh, well, I mean, the outbox is very busy.
The inbox, not so much.
I'm not sure I'm still on their Christmas card list, you know.
Well, you're on our Christmas card list, and that's all that matters.
Yes, thank you.
We were reading a little earlier on, and we've talked about this before, about cancer patients being hit with excess parking fees. Amongst them, Galway, where you have to pay full whack, according to this report, yeah, if you are down there. And I think that's really the hospital that might affect more Donegal people, Betty. But of course, lots of people also travel from Donegal to Dublin for treatment. What do you hear from people, or what's your experience?
Well, the experience is that Donegal patients, who are generally the majority, go to Galway. Some do have to go to Dublin, but they find that the cost attending Galway is really crippling them. Because if you think about it, Greg, you're heading off from Donegal. You have your car, you have your fuel. You have to ensure that everything at home is okay. The cost could be of getting somebody in to look after your children or whatever. You go home, you possibly have to get a B&B down there. So there's a really major financial cost for cancer patients travelling to Galway Hospital, and other patients have to travel to Galway. And you go down to Galway and then you're hit with this parking charge. So you're not going to be there for an hour, Greg. You're going to be there for a considerable part of the day. And it is a major, major cost impacting on cancer patients. And the reality is, we go back again to, where is this money going? Because generally the parking services are being delivered by private companies. So why is our health system punishing patients for attending their hospital necessary appointments?
Yeah, and also too, it's the profit making on people's backs, Betty, which I'm not terribly comfortable with. University Hospital Galway, for an example, over 4 years, €3.5 million in car parking charges. In 2023 alone, they took over €1 million in parking charges.
Yes.
A hospital. That just
doesn't
sit right.
A hospital, yes. And we're developing best, we're supposed to be developing best cancer service and other health services for the sick people of Ireland. And our government and health services are punishing the sick. Punishing the sick, punishing their families. And private companies are ripping in the profits and smiling all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
At the cost of the people whose health at that moment in time and their extended family is in a critical situation. And the financial cost is having a major impact. And a lot of people actually, when they are faced with their cancer diagnosis or other serious health situations, mm-hmm, Greg, they're sitting thinking, how much is this going to cost me?
Yeah.
You know, should I go, should I not? And it shouldn't be. And one of the things that annoys me, even when I read this morning, Greg, was it's only 2 days ago since the Minister for Health was publishing the National Cancer Strategy Implementation Report. And it said about how great and wonderful everything was. All these fancy documents, because I'm not that long ago, I was reading the Model 3 hospital report, the acute hospital inpatient bed capacity, and all these documents all are being printed and costing a fortune to put together, and they're not being implemented. And one of the things that struck me when the minister spoke, or done his report a couple of days ago, he was saying 7 years into the strategy, 40 of the 52 recommendations are considered implemented. What does that mean to the patients who are trying to gather up the money to go to their hospital appointments?
Yeah.
Patients, sick people and their families are being punished by attending to attend their hospital appointments.
Listen, and we don't
have
to.
Absolutely scandalous.
It's scandalous enough without putting layers on. But, you know, often, say, for instance, these cancer patients could be the principal earner in the house. And I think you mentioned this. So they're not earning as much at work. They very likely at this day and age could be in a house that's got defective concrete. Do you know what I mean? So you look at all these layers that people are having to deal with, and then they go down and are faced with a huge bill for simply parking the vehicle to go and get treatment in an attempt to get better. And you have a car park that's making €1 million. The HSE... The car parks have taken in €3.5 million, as I mentioned, and it's going up. In Galway, €630,000 in 2020, €657,000 in 2021, €933,000 in 2022, and €1 million in 2023. Any business would be delighted with that growth, but that growth is
absolutely
happening off the back of sick people.
sick people. And yeah, we had Bernard Gloucester, the CEO of the Health Service Executive, saying about cancer continues to be a key area of focus for the HSE with measures taken to support timely access to diagnosis and treatment. You know, and he goes on to say how great and wonderful the work that they're doing. Mm. They're doing it. They're punishing the sick people. Absolutely. And if you have, as you said, a principal earner in the family, look at the cost and how that impacts on the family life. And you've talked about the defective blocks. I mean, this is scandalous. If you're a sick person and you have a hospital appointment, you're being sent there because someone who is medically qualified to make a diagnosis has referred you to the hospital for treatment. You should not be punished for attending your necessary medical appointment. And our government and our health service and our politicians should hang their heads in shame. There should be no charges. Maybe for a visitor, yes, it could, if you're a visitor. But if you're a patient, you should be issued with a pass or a ticket to attend your hospital appointment. Mm. End of story. This is scandalous.
And let's make it clear as well, by the way, the HSC strategy is to compel us to travel to these places for treatment because the argument with Centre of Excellence and all that kind of stuff and whatever about that, that means we are facing, and it is the plan going forward, as much as we might try and resist it, we are facing these long journeys going forward. So not only the inconvenience, the time, the stress of the travel, the cost of the travel, then when you get there, to the insult to the injury is the car parking charges. So at the very least, if the model is to make us travel, and we're not, we don't agree with that, but that seems to be the way it is don't insult us then by ripping us off in the car park.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, to me, it's the big boys looking after their friends and business. And we go back to the famous Donegal Action for Cancer Care Map. Mm. And if you look, remember, we have the centres of excellence always, the Galway-Dublin line and below it, the prostate access, rapid access clinics, the breath check clinics. Where are we? Up here in Donegal. And we're left, we are being punished for being residents of Donegal and forced to travel and added an unnecessary cost to us. Parking for patients, all patients who are attending hospital should be free. End of story. And our government, HSE, National Cancer Control Program, and politicians, hang your head in shame.
Betty, thank you very much indeed, as always. Things on
sorry,
just before...
Greg, I'm sorry. I feel really angry about this. I suppose it's important to say as well in the context of Letterkenny...
That's what, exactly, you know, what I was about to ask you.
I would find that on Letterkenny, for patients, if you are in difficulty or you think you're going to be there all day, I would generally hope that if you would go along to the car park attendants and explain your situation, they might be able to help you in some way. But the reality is there should be no car parking charges for patients attending necessary hospital and in some cases life-saving services.
All right, Betty.
End
listen,
of story.
Thanks so much indeed,
thank
as
you,
always.
Sir.
Keep up the great work. Thank you. Betty Holmes, spokesperson for Donegal Action for Cancer Care. I've got access to, obviously, emails from Angada Shiokana, and there's something that has been happening over the last couple of weeks that I could not ignore, and that was the frequency and regularity of 14, 15, and 16-year-olds going missing, to the point whereby one a day, literally one a day, has gone missing across the country. And so on some occasions, two a day, three a day. All this month so far, we're in the, what month are we at? We're at the 19th, and we've had in excess of 20, 14, 15, 16, mid-teens going missing. Now, that happens all the time, and I should say as well, by the way, thankfully, pretty much always the day after, 2 days later, they're found safe, and that's sent out by Angada Shiokana as well. But the trend is such that it made me think that there must be something on social media. There have been TikTok trends in the past, how long can you go missing for, or whatever it might be. And I'm not saying that's the case in this case, but I can't do anything about it. But I would love if, on a national level, this was being looked into. Why is it happening? What is the trend? Now, some people say it's because of the pressure, the mental health pressures on younger people. I'm not saying that that's not the case. I simply don't know, but I would love it to be looked into. I don't know whether it's the HSE that might do so or whoever, but I can't be the only one that's noticing that every day a 14, 15 or 16-year-old has gone missing this month. It hasn't been the case. You would see them frequently, you know, maybe two a week, one a week, none a week. And thankfully, 99.9% of the time, from what I can see, they return home either the next day or the day after or the day after that. But why is it particularly in this month that this particular age group of young people are going missing every day? Is there something going on that we aren't aware of? Do you think it's something that perhaps needs to be looked at in a little bit more detail? I want to speak to Freddie Gillen here, who's just joining us on line one with his parking experience. How are you getting on, Freddie?
I'm well, Greg. Thank you very much indeed.
Right. You were down in Dublin 6 weeks ago. What happened to you and what was your experience?
Well, I had an appointment for 2 o'clock or sometime around that. We went into Beaumont Hospital. We went round all the car parks that we could see, and every one that we seen was for staff only. And we seen one on the way in, like the barrier from broken ones.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing there to say you couldn't park or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back into it. We were looking to see where you could do, you know, a pay machine or something. There was absolutely nothing in it. We've seen cars parked up in the grass and everywhere. So there was a car parking space there, and I just said you to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to walk around then for a good 20 minutes just to get to where I was going to. We went in. We'd done the business. We weren't done, I would say, in all fairness, and the appointment that stuck to it. But we were in about a half an hour, 45 minutes. And we had to walk back to the car. Total time was, I would say, maybe 2 hours.
Yeah.
And back to the car. The car was clamped.
No.
Yeah. And after traveling, we say they got to 3.5 hours, 4 hours to get there. To find that the car was clamped whenever it came back. We looked to see where there was a pay point or anything else. We couldn't see one. Now, I did look to see, did it say anything about clamping? And yes, it did.
Right.
But I took a photograph of it. It was in behind a bush.
Yeah. But also, too, you were going down there having had an aneurysm, an appointment in Dublin.
Yeah, right,
a lot on your mind, you know, other than trying to find a sign behind a bush.
Exactly, but that's for them. Look, I couldn't believe that the barriers were broken and never repaired. Now, I am going to appeal it because the fact is I have the photographs of it.
Now, you had to phone a clamping company to get the clamp off. How long did it take them for them to land and how much did it cost you?
Well, it cost me €100. I'm a pensioner.
Oh, no.
So basically, it'd be equivalent to somebody having €1,000 a week and it's going to cost them €500 to get it off.
Yeah.
But it wasn't only that. I'd actually sit on the farms, it could take them up to 2 hours to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, we're hitting 4 o'clock.
Right.
And another 2 hours would be 6 o'clock. But
yes.
Right, they were around fairly fast because we were told by the clamping company we had to pay it before anybody had even come to take it off.
Yeah.
So if I hadn't got a carriage, if I was incapable of making these calls, we wouldn't have been on clamped.
And there's one comment here, Freddie, just before the news that worries me. You say if you get another appointment in Dublin, you wouldn't take it because of the lack of proper parking.
No.
That's worrying.
Absolutely not. And I do have another one. I have to go back now, don't they, see them about what the results were, but the aneurysm, I had the aneurysm all taken out. Everything
right.
was sorted.
Okay.
But this is just appointment now to see specialists. So to me, I would rather die than go back down to Dublin again. And I'm serious about this.
Well, don't say that, Freddie.
I would actually rather just give it a bye because you know for a fact you're going to be clamped before you get back up.
Right. Well, listen, come here. We don't want you saying that. There's bound to be someone out there that can give some advice or an air code or something, Freddie. Listen, thank you very much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Hopefully all the results come back good for you. And you have to make the appointment, Freddie. We don't want to lose you, okay?
No.
Okay. We don't want to lose you. All right, Freddie, take care. Bye-bye. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed.